I'm Josefina Bonsundi Nvumba. Welcome to Retention Conversations, the podcast. I truly believe in the untapped potential existing in Africa and within African communities inside and outside of Africa, whose talent, hard work, and innovations can help and are helping transform our societies. I also believe in the value of stories and that by sharing, we can identify common lessons, challenges, and opportunities for growth. This podcast is for those interested in African narratives and topics that touch African communities, with the hope of creating a safe platform for open conversation, learning, and inspiration. I hope you're as excited as me and that you enjoy listening. Welcome, everyone. Today we have Pamela Ogeniñaco, a Swiss historian and entrepreneur with Ghanaian roots. In this conversation, Pamela talks about her passion for history and literature and how important Black literature particularly has been to her personal growth. I found this conversation very interesting and thought-provoking. It was particularly interesting how Pamela identifies herself in the experience of many other Black women. And I was also very intrigued by her feelings that she shares that many Black African communities, or Black women in particular, often need to work double as hard in order to be recognized. I really hope you enjoy this thought-provoking chat.
My name is Pamela Ogeniñaco. I was born in Switzerland, in French-speaking Switzerland, and I grew up here my whole life. I did all my school here as well. So my dad is originally from Ghana, and my mom is white, but she's actually the mixed one. So her grandfather is Spaniard, Filipino, and Swiss, and my grandmother was German. I just got my MA degree in history, general history, and I wrote my MA dissertation on a sub-program that was called Women Under Racism. The aim was to build up a transnational work network to empower women, to enable them to connect their issues, and to build up, like, to empower them on a transnational level. I'm now going to be a PhD assistant at the University of Geneva, and I also founded and I coordinate this Black literature platform called Afrolits.
How do you find out what you're passionate about and what you wanted to do in the future? How do you find out what motivates you and what you wanted to dedicate the rest of your life in?
When I was a youngster, I actually loved reading about the history of ancient Egypt, ancient Rome, ancient Greece. So yeah, I kind of liked history. I had a lot of narratives about Germany, the Holocaust, because my grandmother was German. So I had a lot of these narratives at home because I grew up mostly with my mom, and she was really interested in those topics. And I always loved reading. I did a paper about Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. So I kind of always liked Black history. And I think the reason why I would specifically, at first it was like Black history in general. I didn't have this gender approach to things. I would say it's because though I'm from mixed background, I was always considered as Black and had to face anti-Black racism or identity issues. And so it's kind of the kind of history I could relate to. It's more Black history, like from the US and not from Africa. So actually I could relate more to the US than I did to the continent because I was born in the hip hop generation. So yeah, all the cultural references and what being cool and Black meant was all related to the US. So it's only afterwards that I got more interested in the continent. I had more access to literature as well.
That's interesting how you're saying that you became more related to what was most available at the same time. So had you made that shift, or had you started being more interested into African literature if the most available type of literature and history was Afro-American? Was that like an active shift that you had to take, or was there anything in particular that really helped you make that shift?
the kind of a relation I had to the continent was more cultural. When I say cultural, it was more like the food, the kind of heritage I had. And then I had a lot of friends from the Congo, and they mostly spoke the language. And it was always about food and language and sometimes music. And then I did travel a few times to Ghana, but it was more like... before I was 22, it was more like, okay, you go to Ghana, you have fun, you see family, but you're not really getting in touch with the culture because you're always with family, you're always having fun. It's only when I was in my 24, 25 that I really started traveling there by myself, wanting to, you know, go to museums, getting in touch with people who live there, like learning more about the history and the culture. Going to university maybe helped, but I didn't have a lot of courses on Africa. Then literature came after my nervous breakdown, where actually it's as if history books were not enough, or I couldn't relate enough to them, like regarding the continent. And literature written by Africans was actually more, I had the feeling was more real. I was more close to a grounded approach, or like people who actually put, like who lived experiences or who could talk about these experiences and these complicated narratives and experiences through literature. So I just found that literature was kind of an access to history of Africa.
What were the first steps to take that passion and convert it into something like AfroLit, or into deciding that you're gonna do a PhD and focus on these kind of issues?
So once I had my nervous breakdown, and this kind of like literature really helped me repair or heal my soul. Because the thing is that, so I also went through therapy, but the thing is that the kind of therapy you get is not adapted to people of color or people with identity and sexist, and who had to deal with sexism. And so I had to actually kind of completed the kind of therapy I was getting with reading and music. So that was what actually took me to then found AfroLit. And regarding history, so I'm actually specializing in Black European history. So I'm still focused on the diaspora. And what brought me there, so I always had history courses, and I majored in history with my BA. But then I was still thinking about, so when I was done with my BA, I was like, maybe you want to go into public administration. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do after my BA in international relations. I was looking for a job or something, or a internship. And there was this call for an internship in communications. So I was like, okay, let me try communication. And so I got the job. I worked there for a year and a half. It was amazing. I loved the experience. And it also kind of showed me that, okay, actually what I really want to do, and what really, like who I am, is actually really a historian. Like that's the kind of thing I could see myself doing if I had to stay in the academia and continue with the MA degree, etc. So I did my MA in history. And whilst I was doing my MA, so I had courses on the history of Europe, but a lot of history of the Black diaspora in the Americas. I also went to this Black Europe summer school. I also joined two groups, so a militant collective called the AfroSource Collective, and a group that is more focused on research and like critical knowledge, which is PostSeed, and which is affiliated to the University of Geneva. So by joining these two groups, I also got more in touch with post-colonial and critical race studies and approaches. And so these whole 3 years actually led me to me wanting to specialize in the history of Black Europeans, because it's a history that still needs to be researched and written about. I think I also came to terms with you can actually be Black and European. I mean, my experience is a Black Swiss experience. I can relate to, or I have references with Black America. I have my background linked to the continent, the African continent, but my experience and who I am is an Afro-Swiss woman.
And what would you say are the biggest challenges or that you had to face in the past or that you continue to face today in regards to your research or in regards to taking AfroLit forward?
The biggest challenge, I would say, being a Black woman is overworking. You kind of have to do four times more than the average in order to get maybe at the same position or just to be recognized. And then you also, I mean, it's something that you grew up with, but then once you enter even university or whatever you do, it's true that it's as if you have to be exceptional to be recognized, because if you're just average, you're not seen. The other challenge is because I do like the either the research I do within the academia or AfroLit, it's always related kind of to being Black and a woman, etc. You always get remarks like, oh, but is it because you're a Black woman that you're researching these topics, and how objective can you be, or how scientific can you be? And of course, when people dismiss your research or what you do, it's as if they dismiss you as well, you know, because indeed you are a Black woman. So people tend to say, but why would you research history of Black women? I mean, is it that important? I'm like, excuse me.
Yeah, so then how do you actually overcome some of these challenges?
So about overworking, so I read a lot, because this whole issue of women of color overworking or always putting pressure on themselves or always having to be this quote-unquote strong Black woman or superwoman, you know, is something that has been written about a lot. So I read a lot in order to feel that this is not, I'm not the only one that's going through this. I'm not an isolated case. Yeah, it has a more structural background. I kind of learned to be gentle to myself and take things easy. I try to be aligned with my needs. So let's say there's a day where I wake up and I really don't want to do anything apart being at home and reading. I'm like, yeah, just do it.
Do you think that to a certain extent, perhaps that feeling that sometimes we as the Black community or Black women, we have that we need to overwork and do more than the rest, is it a reality or is it something that we also pressure ourselves into, and then therefore the society also expects that from us?
Yeah, I think it's both. I really think it's both, because from my experience, that maybe two times where I decided to just do the basic, like anybody else, I mean anybody else meaning white men, you know, I was at some points, like especially, you know, uni, where you put yourself into so much pressure. And at the end, sometimes I was like, hey, but look at this dude, you know, he's just doing the basic and he's also getting a good paper. So I tried once to just do, you know, the basic thing, and I literally got put on the spot in the middle of the class. It was a seminar, and the teacher was like, but why didn't you do this and why didn't you do that? And you know, like, I really thought that from what you were, because we had a meeting before, etc., and I had kind of had ideas, so he had expectations, and he was kind of disappointed that, oh, from the expectations he had, actually kept it to a very basic level. And at the same time, it's also a vicious circle, because I am a perfectionist and I am good at what I do, and I do have good ideas. So of course, when you're good at what you do and people know it, they always have these expectations. Like, hey, she is a good, you know. So when you just keep it basic, they're like, but you're capable of so much more, you know. I have a lot of friends who are not in the academia and who are, some of them are job seeking, some of them are more in the non-qualified or semi-qualified jobs. And I'm talking about Black men. And it's still a huge struggle because they are always confronted. I mean, though they kind of try and value what they're doing, they still always see themselves as belittled. And if you are a woman and, yeah, you're kind of in what they would consider a higher standard of employment, or let's say they're in or you're a qualified worker, and then and they are maybe not unqualified or semi-qualified, because of patriarchy, you do go through some shit. It also has a huge impact on relationships between women and, I mean, heterosexual relationships, where even if people are trying to struggle and bring up new values, the pressure of the dominant society is still there.
What are some of your biggest achievements and what are you most proud of?
I think I'm proud of everything.
good, that's a good start. Yes.
Yeah, I'm really, like, I'm proud of Afrolit. I'm proud of what it is becoming. I am super happy to continue in the academia. So I'm proud and I'm super happy.
What are the barriers that are on the way to achieving our goals? What would you think these are?
Fear. It's not only fear in your head and you tripping about something that may not happen. Sometimes it's fear based on things that you actually see happening, you know? And I think that is the most important barrier. It's like overcoming the fear of being judged, of maybe because you're staying yourself and being yourself, you might not get what you want. On a personal level, because I am a Afrofeminist and I stick to my struggles and to my values, relationships with men are very complicated. There is this fear of staying alone and feeling, yeah, and loneliness, etc. But at the same time, you really cannot stay in a relationship where you kind of have to compromise, you know, who you are and your humanity in order to just make somebody else feel comfortable, you know, and not be by yourself. Especially as a woman, the more successful you are in your career in a patriarchal society, the more you are frightening for guys. There's also fear related to, will I always have a job, especially in these times, you know, where you can, I mean, structural unemployment is everywhere for everyone. So will I always have a job? Will I survive? Be who you are. Don't compromise yourself. You'll be unhappy if you do. And it worked in my case. So I think that trusting your allies and trusting not the system, but like people who are there and who are not aligned on those values and who are ready to, you know, support you in what you do are there. And it's also about getting in touch with them, acknowledging them and trusting them. So sometimes also to believe in dreams. I think that's the hardest if you're always struggling and you're always being in the present and maybe always having to deal with the past, is also enabling yourself to dream and to sometimes tell yourself, why wouldn't it happen to me?
Do you think that everyone has the privilege to dream? From dreaming to pursuing that dream, is that something that you need to have a privilege for?
Definitely. Really, and that's the reason why I am happy and I'm proud and I'm really grateful, because I'm able to live and to pursue my dreams, and that is like a huge privilege. Where I can see that my entourage, some people in my entourage, yeah, they're still kind of stuck.
And does that put more responsibility on people that have the privilege then to assist or support?
Yeah, somehow it does. You cannot take everything on your shoulders as one person. You cannot do that. It will kill you. going back to this overwork and putting pressure, especially on women, etc. It's still finding a balance, but definitely I do have this sense of I am so privileged in this position and I am grateful. And giving back means never forgetting how hard it was at times, never forgetting and always acknowledging that I am lucky or I have that privilege compared to others.
What advice would you give to young people sharing a similar sociocultural background to yours who have dreams and goals still to be realized?
Be aligned with yourself. And one thing I would say is that you can, most of the time, the struggle is also within you. You cannot control what is outside, but you can control sometimes what is in you. And it's finding your own resources, knowing what is your talent, what you're good at, and trusting yourself and having those resources that, okay, build up your self-confidence. And those are things that will really give you a strong foundation to face whatever the challenges you're going to deal with. Whatever you can do at your level, find the tools, find the resources you can always dig into, you know, in order to move on. Each time you feel fear, sadness, anger, etc., acknowledge it. It's legitimate. You don't need to be ashamed of it. Share it with people. And yeah, always trust that you're never by yourself. You're never an isolated case. It is a privilege, but it's also the true liberation as people of color to still have dreams. And if we kill our dreams, that's it. Try the best you can to stick to still have dreams and to still pursue them and believe in yourself. And if everybody does that, there will be a change.